Hi, this is Walter Wiese with Parks Fly Shop's Fly Fishing the Yellowstone Area podcast. Today I'm going to talk about the fishing on the Yellowstone River at the immediate end of runoff, the kind of immediate post-runoff fishing. And the reason I'm going to talk about this is because we're going to have a long and pretty heavy runoff this season, more than likely. And so we're going to get an extended period of this kind of fishing, and it's not what people usually think of when they think of fishing the Yellowstone River. And this kind of calls for rethinking how you fish the river. You know, typically you envision Montana fly fishing in the summertime, late July, as, you know, big dry fly with a nymph dropper, maybe even just dry flies, and beautiful bluebird skies, caddis hatches, things like that. And that's simply not going to happen this year. From probably when the Yellowstone clears, between the 10th and 15th of July, more than likely, until the 20th to 25th, the fishing is going to be primarily subsurface, and early in that period, exclusively subsurface. And that might sound like a downer to some people, but during these conditions, the fish typically are very, very aggressive when you get some big fish. So probably the it's a little less photogenic kind of fishing, but in terms of the quality size of the fish, we frequently get some really good ones when we have conditions like this. And the kind of fishing I'm talking about here, you kind of need to understand how a freestone river works out here in the Rockies. In general, your lowest water levels are going to be, well, a freestone river, meaning a river that's dependent primarily upon natural runoff from rain and snow and groundwater, rather than actual springs or dam releases. The Yellowstone's a river like this, the Gallatin's a river like this. The Madison is kind of like this, although it does have some tailwater effect from Hebgen Lake. The Missouri is a tailwater exclusively, and it's a very different river. So anyway, the way a freestone river works is out here in the Rockies is that it's going to reach its lowest level sometime February, March, as all of the previous year's groundwater and runoff and so on are kind of in the system already, and the river gets lower and lower. And then sometime in February, March, it's going to start coming up again slowly as increased snowmelt and increased precipitation in general. We start getting rain at lower elevations during that time, kind of starts to bring the river up. And that's going to continue until the real heavy high elevation snowmelt hits, which depending on the river is going to be any time from late April until the middle of May is when that really heavy high elevation snowmelt hits. And then the river is going to surge up in flow and become unfishable, both in clarity and in terms of just safety. A fishable flow on the Yellowstone River, prime fishable flow, might be 4,000 to 5,000 CFS, and some years it's going to hit 30,000 CFS during the peak of runoff. So there's going to be trees and debris and so on in the river, and no visibility at all. And so really, the bigger rivers, at least, typically are not at all fishable during the runoff, during the peak of the runoff. And the river gets muddy pretty quickly as that process starts to happen. It'll kind of yo-yo up and down for the first couple weeks of runoff, be fishable during cooler periods, drier periods when there isn't a lot of runoff, and then be muddy and higher when the runoff's actually occurring. And it gets muddy as soon as it hits a certain level for the first time in a given year. So the first time river hits, say, 3,000 CFS, it'll get muddy, and then it'll drop some and be clear until it gets up to, say, 3,500 CFS the next time. And the reason for that is you get dust and dirt and sand and so on deposited, and it picks that stuff up the first time it goes through. But then the next time it reaches that level, all that silt and sediment and so on is gone already, and so it doesn't get muddy as it rises that second time. And of course, as it rises towards peak runoff, it's going to rise very quickly, get a lot of debris, sediment and so on, pick that up, and it's going to be filthy muddy during the peak of runoff. But the upshot of picking up all the sediment and so on means that it clears much more quickly as it drops. I should say at a higher water level as it drops. And so this year, I wouldn't be surprised if there's fishable clarity on the Yellowstone River at 12 to 13,000 CFS flow at the Corwin Springs gauge. And at this flow, the Yellowstone River is extremely high. It's up in the bushes, still over its banks even in places, and pushing quite a bit of water. Still some debris in the river, still not a whole lot of visibility, say a foot to 2 feet. And that's in the shallow water where you can actually see your boots. And it'll still have kind of a coffee with cream color. Excuse me. And so it won't actually look like what you're used to fish, but since it's been at that higher, dirtier level, and it's now starting to drop and clear, that first time the fish are able to see food and reach food in terms of the current speed, they kind of go crazy. They get very, very aggressive. And that's the kind of immediate post-runoff fishing I'm talking about right now. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is tackle for this kind of fishing. Kind of treating this before techniques and flies and so forth, because it's very important to be properly prepared for the conditions you expect to find. As I said, the river is going to be moving fast. It's going to be up in the bushes, not very photogenic, and basically you need tackle that can handle those conditions. We're generally going to fish 9 foot, 6 or 7 weight fly rods. This is one time when even a longer rod could make sense. And basically what we're going to do is use the 7 weight for most streamer fishing, especially if we're using a sink tip. And we'll use the 6 weight if we're indicator nymphing. You could certainly use a 7 weight for either purpose. I really want the 7 weight for streamer fishing. I wouldn't use just a 6 during this time frame. The 7 weight just has more backbones, a stronger rod, and it can pull fish away from cover more quickly, fight fish harder when you're dealing with heavy current. That can obviously give the fish a bit of an advantage. And you're going to want to have 2 lines. Obviously, for the nymph rod, a floating line, usually weight forward, and for the sinking, or for the other line, you'll want to have a very fast sink tip. Now, you don't actually need a full sink tip line. One thing that can work pretty well now is the various loop-to-loop sinking leaders. You don't need the flies to sink very far, you just need them to sink quickly, and so a 5 or 7 foot mini tip that we sell in our shop, and Cabela's sells them, pretty much every fly shop is going to sell them, that will work just fine as a leader on your streamer rod. And then the other things you want to do is be prepared for fishing fairly short leaders and very, very heavy leaders and tippets. Usually people come out here and they expect to fish 3 to 5x leaders and tippets, whereas in the spring runoff period, the immediate post runoff period, we're going to be fishing 0 to 2x most of the time. And I mean, this is essentially bass size tackle. For your sinking line, you don't want very much leader and tippet at all. I'll typically fish about 2 feet, a foot of kind of butt section, and then a foot of, say, 10 to 12 pound test. And then for your nymphing rod, you'll want to have, say, a 7.5 to 9 foot, probably starting off with a 0 or 1X leader and maybe dropping down to 2X at times. But usually that 0 to 1X is just fine. And the other thing you want to have is a whole lot of flies. I realize that that's kind of an odd thing to say, but you're going to lose a lot of flies during this period. You're fishing right up tight to the bushes. You're getting some big fish in tight cover. You can't really stop to retrieve flies when they get caught in the bushes, and you're obviously not going to always get them back from the bushes when you point the rod at them to try to jerk them back. So have quite a few flies. I typically tell my clients during this period that they're going to lose 10 to 20 flies apiece on the average trip. And if you don't lose half a dozen, you're probably not fishing right, because you need to be very, very tight to the cover. So that kind of brings me to the discussion of tactics. If you're in good shape and can handle scrambling around on the boulders, areas with steeper banks are good places to fish if you're on foot. Those steeper banked areas mean you can actually get to the river pretty easily. And those steeper banks also typically have a lot of boulders and so on that create small pockets tied to the bank that you can fish behind. The if you've ever been to Gardner, the area right below the Gardner Bridge on up to the mouth of the Gardner River is pretty much ideal for this kind of fishing. It's fairly open, it's got some willows, but otherwise isn't too heavily obstructed. And you can scramble along through those rocks and fish tight to the banks and catch a lot of fish. But for most people, the best way of handling this is kind of fishing out of the drift boat. It's obviously easier. You don't need to scramble along the boulders, which, you know, it's physically demanding. A lot of people just can't do it or don't want to do it. You know, they're on vacation. So if you're fishing out of a drift boat, basically your guide's going to be back rowing as hard as you can to slow the boat down enough, and you're going to be running pretty close to the bank and casting right to the bank. It's pretty much impossible to be too far, or I should say too close to the bank, during this period, the immediate runoff period. You're going to be casting streamers in literally into 6 inches of water, stripping them out a few feet from the bank, then casting again. That's kind of the one way of fishing it, fishing a streamer type rig. You want to put that thing in there right tight to the rocks or the bushes. Any little pockets in the bushes, you know, places where a tree has fallen down, making a little eddy, things like that. If you're nymph fishing, you do it pretty similarly. We'll usually use an indicator and cast it in right tight to the bank again, and just don't even dead drift it to start with. Just give it a couple twitches out from the banks a few feet. Then once it's 1 to 2 feet off the bank or off the bushes, throw a big mend in there and let it sink briefly, and then fish a short dead drift. You can do this without the indicator as well. Just kind of pitch the streamer or the nymph into the bushes and then just sort of drag it out slightly, and then throw a mend in there and let it sink briefly and watch your line to see if you get a strike. Typically, during this period, you'll either get the strike quickly or you won't get it at all. Fishing very, very short drifts. Again, tight to those bushes, tight to the rocks, any kind of slow spots that you see along the banks. Kind of some specific areas to look for. Anywhere where you do get a stretch of relatively bare bank where you can get a longer dead drift, go for it. You still want to be tight to the banks, you know, 6 inches to 2 feet off the banks. But if you do get a longer stretch there where there aren't too many bushes to catch your flies, by all means let it dead drift for 10 or 15 feet. And then the other thing that can be really, really effective at this time is to poke into backwaters, riffle corners, the areas behind wing dikes further down the Yellowstone River, areas where there are some larger stretches of slow current. And then typically in those areas, we'll almost exclusively fish the streamers. And fishing, you know, strip retrieves, and sometimes if they're very turbulent, kind of backwaters where there's a strong eddy current, we'll just kind of let it swing along that eddy current. And these are especially good places at this time of year because they are, again, those places where the fish can get some cover, and numbers of fish can get some cover. I've mentioned this several times already, but you should be prepared to lose a lot of flies doing this. And for that reason, your fly choice should basically, much more than other times of the year, focus on kind of durable flies that are quick to tie that you can afford to lose. We're going to fish a lot of woolly buggers this time as a streamer. In fact, if we're going to fish streamers this time of year, it's pretty much always going to be a woolly bugger. Water's still quite dirty, and so you want to go with solid outline colors, black and white. You know, not together, but black streamers, black woolly buggers, and then white woolly buggers. Probably our first two choices. Then the third choice would actually be a combination of either black and orange, black and yellow, or brown and yellow. And what those imitate is the roughly imitate is the stonefly nymphs. And typically during years when we have a late heavy runoff like this year, we don't really get much fishable dry fly action during the salmon fly and golden stone hatches, but the fishing, the nymph fishing is really good. And so fishing a woolly bugger that looks like a nymph but also has the action of a bait fish can be very effective. And then if you're nymphing, what we're going to do is fish junk bug type flies. If you have seen our YouTube channel, I've got a fly up right now called a bub fly, which is a very classic version of this sort of junk bug type fly. And what a junk bug is essentially a large impressionistic fly, easy to tie, durable, looks a little bit like a lot of different food items, and just kind of looks like a big juicy mouthful for the fish. And that's a good fly, the bub fly. The various girdle bug type flies, which are, you'll hear them called rubber legs, which is, it's basically just a chenille body with rubber legs. And even, you know, classic flies like the woolly worm, a black and grizzly, heavily weighted woolly worm will work just fine during this period. And then we'll fish similar, easy to tie stonefly nymphs like Matt Minch's stonefly nymphs, Bitch Creek's, yuck bugs, flies of that nature, big, you know, size 2 to 6, maybe 2 to 8 nymphs that sort of resemble stoneflies but could pass for, you know, injured bait fish, a whole lot of different things. That's going to be our primary nymph. And then behind that, we're going to run a smaller, again, impressionistic, easier to tie type of nymph, usually size 10 to 12. And what we're going to fish in that location is going to be a beadhead prince nymph or a bead heron copper or a big soft tackle type nymph, a big hair's ear soft tackle or peacock bodied soft tackle, you know, a somewhat smaller woolly worm type fly, smaller golden stonefly if we're fishing a big one ahead of it, something like that. Again, large food items, bigger nymphs, the fish can see them, the outlines of them disturb a lot of water, but a little bit smaller than that front nymph. We'll also fish one of those smaller nymphs behind the streamers. The streamer disturbs a lot of water when you're stripping it, but and catches the fish's attention. But once the fish's attention is on the flies, they'll see those smaller ones, whereas if you're just dead drifting the smaller fly by itself, maybe they wouldn't pay attention to it. And that's probably your best bet for numbers of fish is on that smaller fly, whereas the largest fish typically come on either the stonefly nymph type, junk bug flies, or the streamers. I remember a couple years ago, I took Doug Korn, one of our fly tiers, on his first ever float, and primarily fished a white or black woolly bugger trailing a small golden stone nymph, about a size 12 golden stone nymph, holiday stone, if you look on our website. And he caught probably 70-30, maybe 80-20 on the golden stone nymph, but then the bigger fish were on the streamers. And we put a lot of fish in the boat that day, put, you know, probably double digits of 16 to 18 inch fish, maybe a couple slightly larger than that, and he hooked some really big fish that he unfortunately all lost, and you know, caught quite a few smaller fish as well, but he did lose probably 15 to 20 of those flies. So that's kind of the trade-off. You're going to get pretty big aggressive fish, chances for real pigs, but you're also going to lose a bunch of bugs. As always, thanks for listening, and if you have any requests or questions, anything like that, feel free to contact us. And now that you've listened to all this, I'm going to make one quick note here. Obviously, we're not just doing these podcasts for our health, and so trying to figure out if this is actually going to do anything business-wise for us. And so for listeners of this podcast, just for the next few days, I'm going to make an offer. If you book a trip with us for summer fishing, between now, which is the 7th of April, and maybe it's the 6th of April, actually. But if you book a trip between now and April 15th with us, and you reference this podcast, we'll give it to you for $350, which is our shoulder season rate. So if you're looking to do a summer float trip on the Yellowstone or a walk trip in Yellowstone Park, make reference to this podcast when you book, and we'll set you up for a good cheap rate on that. So just kind of a added bonus for listening to this podcast and trying to figure out if it works for us. As always, thanks for listening.